Patricia Miller has written extensively about the intersection of politics, sex, and religion, everything you're not supposed to talk about. Her work appears in Religion Dispatches and elsewhere. And when she was last on this show, we talked about the book that she was working on, Good Catholics, The Battle Over Abortion in the Catholic Church. Well, the book is now out, published by University of California Press. And if ever there was such a thing as an ethical, theological, historical page-turner, this is it. And I'm delighted that it brings Patricia Miller back to State of Belief Radio. Patty, welcome back.
Thank you so much, Welton. I'm delighted to be back.
What made you want to write this book?
Well, as someone who grew up in the Catholic Church in the 70s and 80s in a fairly normal, moderate parish in suburban New Jersey, I was just really struck by how much abortion discourse has come to dominate the life of the Catholic Church. That just wasn't the way it was 20 or 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You could happily go to church for years and participate in parish activities and honestly never hear the word abortion mentioned. It was not the marker of what made a good Catholic. And it seems like nowadays that's become really the demarcation between what is a good Catholic and not a good Catholic, is someone adhering to a very strict anti-abortion position. I was curious as how that came to be.
The disconnect between how most people think doctrine is formed and how it sometimes is actually formed is nothing less than breathtaking. And then that doctrine makes its way into the secular world to radically influence public policy. It's a hard thing to summarize, I know, but I wish you would talk briefly about the way the development of the pill was handled by the Catholic Church.
It's a fascinating story, and I guess I would just preface it by saying it shouldn't surprise anyone that the development of Catholic doctrine, like so many other things, is at the end of the day fundamentally political. It often serves the needs of the people who are in power at the Vatican at that moment. There was a movement in the 60s to approve birth control. It was very consistent with Catholic doctrine. A very famous judge and author, Noonan, wrote a book called Contraception and really laid out all the reasons that Catholic doctrine did not say you couldn't use contraception. It was kind of a hodgepodge of myth and theology and folk beliefs and long-term old-school prohibitions against using contraception because there was an interest in growing the population back in the days when there weren't a lot of people around. And he said, you know, there's really no reason we can't change that. A lot of theologians believed that the doctrine could be changed, that it was really based on a very outmoded idea of marriage, which was that marriage was primarily for procreation, and that in the modern world, the church had already recognized that marriage was both for procreation and also for companionship and for the completion of the person within the relationship of marriage. And so they said, you know, there's no reason we can't change this, because we've already recognized when we said you could use natural family planning, which is the rhythm method, that Catholics could limit their family size. So why not just change the doctrine? It was really just changing the method that was allowable, not whether family planning itself was allowable. Perfectly logical approach to evolving a doctrine. It was really an evolution of a doctrine. The reason that didn't happen was political. There was a small faction within the church that felt very strongly that the church's authority on these issues was tied to not being seen as wrong on the issue ever. And there was really a underlying belief that to give women the right to decide when and if they got pregnant was really going to change the way the church viewed women. They viewed women still as primarily a mother and defined by their biological function. And when they really looked at what that change in contraception doctrine would mean to that idea of woman, they backed down and they did not change it. It was a very political decision at the end of the day.
And where did the pressure come from for the decision going the way it did?
The belief is that there was a small group of thinkers within the Vatican, about four bishops who famously wrote a minority report to the mainstream report. Interestingly enough, the Pope's own commission on birth control said the doctrine should be changed. It was a minority report written by four dissenting theologian priests that really held sway over a much larger group of both bishops and lay people who did decide the doctrine should be changed.
So it didn't just come down from heaven.
It did not come down from heaven. It came from actual humans.
There's an amazing quotation that you attribute to a theologian of the period who asked what would happen to the millions we've sent to hell for using contraception if the teaching were suddenly changed. Now, was that theology or was that politics?
That was politics, and I think that was human pride. It was the sense that if we admitted we were wrong, we would look foolish. And so, therefore, we must hold on to a incorrect belief in the face of all the overwhelming evidence that it is, in fact, incorrect. And you can see a lot of what's happened in the Catholic Church ever since then has been trying to cover that up and explain that and paper that over. And that's why there's, I think, so much instability in the church doctrine around all the sexuality-related issues, because that doctrine was so fundamentally flawed.
Patty, I don't mean to sound cynical here, because I have appreciation for the Catholic Church, but I've read the formative theologians of the Catholic Church, the ancient ones, and when you read Augustine and Aquinas and those people, I have to say they were so screwed up on sexuality that they couldn't have done anything else but put the church in a confused situation.
That's very true. And they were even more screwed up, unfortunately, on women, because they saw women as really a lesser version of men. As I think it was Augustine who called women a misbegotten creature. They saw women as kind of poorly formed men, as half-formed men. So anything that had to do with woman and sex is just kind of polluted from the get-go by that understanding. And that's exactly what the modern theologians were trying to look at when they suggested revising the birth control doctrine, because they said our understanding of woman has evolved. So let's look at that doctrine in light of how we view woman nowadays. And when that didn't happen, it unfortunately kept a lot of those historical undertones about women and sex in the Catholic doctrine that should have been excavated right about 1968.
When you look at the endless lawsuits over the contraception coverage mandate today, how much difference do you think it would make if this history was more widely known?
People would have laughed the bishops and their allies right out of the courts when they came forward with these lawsuits, because not only do most Catholics use contraception, but the doctrine is so theologically unsound and was so close to being changed that I really think they would have no viability on this issue if this was better known.
What about abortion in church history?
Abortion, too, has a very interesting history where it was viewed at different times in different ways. The church has always taught that abortion is a sin, but the Catholic Church did not teach until very recently that abortion was murder. Much like society in general, the Catholic Church recognized that the human fetus gains value as the pregnancy progresses. Early abortion was not considered murder. Much as in common law in this country and in other countries, abortion before a fetus had what they used to call quickened, which was about the fourth or fifth month when the woman could feel the fetus moving, that was not considered murder. That was considered before the fetus was a definable human being separate from the mother, and that was treated separately than murder. It was considered serious and in some cases a sin, but there was much more leeway for abortion than people think of in Catholic theology.
What were the battles that took place around that?
The biggest battle really has been this idea that this idea even existed. Pro-choice Catholics, pro-choice theologians, pro-choice priests and nuns, all of which there have been, have argued that this history of understanding Catholic theology on abortion needs to be better understood to have discussions about things, for instance, if abortion should be allowed in cases of rape or incest or fetal deformity, which there's widespread support for allowing abortion in those instances. So the fact that these discussions have even occurred in church history has been somewhat suppressed. The Catholics who have said either that you can talk about abortion or that if you are a Catholic in public life, if you are a Catholic politician and want to vote in ways that represent all your constituents, not just your Catholic constituents, since no one who is a politician in America just has Catholic constituents, that they're not allowed to do that. There's been huge battles over the issue of pro-choice Catholic politicians being able to represent the pro-choice point of view in their political life, even if they hold a view in their private life that is more close to Catholic doctrine.
Mm-hmm. When I grew up in the evangelical tradition, Catholics were only questionably Christian. And yet the evangelical churches have taken the hard-line Catholic doctrine and made that their doctrine.
I think it's a very fascinating development of the past, especially 20 years. We just recently hit the 20th anniversary of a very landmark declaration called Catholic and Evangelicals Together,
right,
where the evangelicals agreed to set aside their historic taste of Catholicism to team up with conservative Catholics on the life issues.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when you really begin to see this very hardcore Catholic doctrine about abortion, but increasingly about contraception also, which evangelicals historically never had really had objections to contraception one way or the other. They tended to be at least agnostic about the issue. One of my contentions of my book is this far-right Catholic distaste for contraception has really infected the Christian right in some ways as well.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you were already smart when you started writing this book, so I want to ask you, what surprised you the most while you were working on the book?
Really, what surprised me the most was the stories of the people that I encountered, especially the women who very bravely in the 60s came out publicly and said, I use birth control, I believe a good Catholic can have an abortion or can support abortion rights in public life. These women were some of the earliest Catholic theologians women. They were very cutting edge for their era, and a lot of them didn't get a lot of public acclaim at the time. Many of them were unable to find careers in theology because they were women. But they waged a very lonely fight because they felt it was right that women should make their voice heard in the Catholic Church. I was surprised to learn how many women there were like that, say, in the 60s and 70s, and how little known they are nowadays because they were kind of successfully stifled in some ways by the church, but of course their ideas have really lived on in the pro-choice Catholic doctrine that exists today.
If you had your way, when a reader finishes reading that book, what do you want them to feel?
I would like them to feel that the Catholic history on sex and sexuality is much richer than most people realize, that the theology and the doctrine that has been kind of sold, especially in the past 20 years, it's kind of a thin gruel, and there's a much richer soup of thought and people and ideas that is much more in line with the democratic tradition. Catholics have always taken great pride in, you know, many from immigrant populations coming to this country and participating in this democracy, and I think we've seen a real narrowing of those views, especially when it comes to abortion and contraception. And I think Catholics should be proud of the richness of that history and not ashamed to embrace that.
Mm. Patricia Miller is the author of the excellent new book, Good Catholics, The Battle Over Abortion in the Catholic Church. You can read an excerpt at Religion Dispatches, actually, and we'll link to that from our website. Patty also has a new column up at Huffington Post headlined, Why the Catholic Church's Suppression of Abortion Dissent Should Concern Us All. It's well worth reading as well. Patricia Miller is a past editor of Conscience Magazine, the leading journal of pro-choice Catholic thought, and the editor-in-chief of National Journal's Daily Healthcare Briefings. Patty, great to have you on State of Belief Radio, and the conversation is enlightening and interesting, and I hope we can talk again soon.
I look forward to it, Welton. Thank you so much.